like you all just to think about what you hope to be doing tomorrow. Nibs, what are you hoping to be doing tomorrow?
Wow, good question. Go to school.
Go to school, okay. Yeah. Are you looking forward to that?
Sometimes.
Okay. What are you all hoping to be doing next week? What are you looking forward to? Sorry? A party. What are you looking forward to in the next week?
Going to school, to be fair.
Okay. No parties? You should go and join the Brownies, obviously.
Sounds like a riot.
Okay. Next month? Christmas. Okay. What are you looking forward to next month?
I'll have to agree and go with Christmas.
Okay. What are you specifically hoping to do at Christmas? What's the best bit?
Seeing most of my family, I think.
Seeing most of your family, okay. Next year, what do you hope to be or be doing next year? Seeing family. Nibs?
Pass my end of year exams.
Pass your end of year. There'll be a party after that, won't there?
Yeah.
We don't want to hear too much about that. How about in 5 years, where do you hope to be in 5 years? Will it look the same as now? Okay, for some it will look the same. Nibs, where do you hope to be in 5 years? What do you hope to be doing?
Going to university.
Going to university? Okay, and how about 20 years' time?
Wow.
What would you like to have achieved in 20 years' time? How would your life look then?
Hopefully have a house, a job, maybe a family.
Thank you very much. Can you go and sit down, please? Thank you. Now I'd like you to sit and think for a moment. What do we mean by sacrifice? Is it a sacrifice to give your mum your orange Smarties when you don't like orange Smarties? No. Is it a sacrifice to give your mum your orange Smarties when you love orange Smarties? Yes. Is that all a sacrifice is, though? Do we tend to think of that really as being a sacrifice? Yeah, we might do. Is there anybody else who'd like to tell me what they think is involved in a sacrifice? It means hardship. It's costly, isn't it? It's painful because it comes from deep within. We heard in our first reading, so Christ was sacrificed once to take away the sins of many. And that was not an easy sacrifice because he was whipped, he was ridiculed, he was spat at, he was called names, he was rejected, and then he was crucified. One of the worst deaths known to man. Today we're going to be thinking about sacrifice, and particularly the sacrifice in the First World War. But I think it would be a good idea for us to step back into what life was like at that stage, because it was very different to now. Can you think of anything that we have now that they didn't have in World War I? Brownies. What do you think we've got now that they didn't have? Phones. What would life be like without your mobile phone? Devastating. Okay, what else? Television. Things have really changed. Okay, so about 100 years ago, there were 46 million people living in the British Isles. And we were a powerful company. If you remember, we had had the British Empire. Who do you think was the biggest employer at that time in this country? Where do you think most of our jobs were? Somebody said farming. Okay, what else? Mining, okay. I'm looking for something else, actually. Not the army, not It was servants. About 80% of people were employed as servants. Do you think they lived comfortably? If you were right, we'll do the middle class first. How much of the population do you think were middle class at that stage? It was actually about just under 20%. Think about the difference now. To be middle class, you employed a servant. You probably still had gas lighting in your home. Electric light had made its way to most of the cities, but most people hadn't been able to afford to put electric light into their house, so their lights were provided by gas, as was their hot water. And by that stage, the middle classes did have an indoor bathroom with a bath. If you were poor and you were in the working classes, do you think you had a bath? No, what you probably had was a tin bath that you'd have to fill up with water in front of the fire. You didn't have indoor plumbing. You had to go down the garden to the privy in the rain. You either had gas lighting or you had candles. And most people lived at just above subsistence level. But about 15% only lived at subsistence level. Subsistence level means that you have just enough money to provide some form of heat and fuel for cooking and food, and a little bit of money to maybe make sure that actually if your clothes, you've outgrown them or they've worn away, that you can replace them. But that's it. But there were another 10% of this country who did not live at subsistence level and who had to make the decision whether they actually had a little bit of fuel to keep warm or a little bit of food, and they would go days sometimes without food at all. Although most working class people at that stage lived in two up, two down, and you'd get, you could have up to 9 children sharing a big bed. And the only time you were warm was when the youngest one wet the bed. So most people downstairs had 2 rooms. One was the best room for when guests came round, but actually you lived in the other room. So you did all your cooking in there. That's where you sat. That's where you ate. That was your living room. They worked around 54 hours a week if they were employed. And they had a half day on Saturday, some of them. That was only just beginning to be introduced in 1914. But many working class families lived in one room. So they slept in there as well, the whole family. Germany invaded Belgium on does anybody know? 3rd of August, and declared war on France the same day. And Britain declared war on Germany on the 4th of August. At that time, we had 80,000 troops in our army and could call on around 630,000 reserves, those who'd been trained before. Germany had 3.7 million troops in their army. So men of between 18 and 38 years were asked to enlist. Although no one under 18 could be deployed overseas, they could go through the training so that they could be sent overseas. They had to be over 5'3". I'm 5'4½" and I've got heels on now. So actually, that's not terribly tall, is it? And they had to have a chest measurement of 34 inches or over. Many men volunteered within those first few months, with quite a few of them being under 18. Why do you think so many people volunteered? A lot of it was from duty. Life was very different then as well. You had no television, you had no phones. So actually churches would be full on a Sunday because that was often the only time you got to meet other people and time to talk to them. Time perhaps to see your families, time to see that nice girl or boy who you thought was really rather nice. And people at that stage were brought up to do their duty. They didn't think so much of themselves. It was far more community orientated. So there was duty, but there was also excitement. If you were one of the working class, and that was most people in this country, the vast majority, and you were living with 3 days since you'd had some food, would you join up? If your parents were struggling to feed all your younger children and you were an older boy, would you join up? And it was exciting because actually at that stage, young men, boys particularly, don't really think much of fear. They might die, but that doesn't fill them so much with fear. Then there were the wages, because this meant that they could actually have a regular income. And if your friend was going, yeah, that sounded quite a good inducement as well. And don't forget, at that stage, most people had not travelled overseas. So there were lots of reasons. How do you think, if the age was 18 and over, that they were able to volunteer? That doesn't sound right, does it? Would it be possible now? No, because we've all got birth certificates. But at that stage, not everybody did have birth certificates. And the recruiting officers were paid 2 shillings and 6 pence for each recruit that they signed up. That's the equivalent of about £6-7 now. So if you signed up 100 people in one day, that was quite a lot of money, wasn't it? But also, some of the recruiting officers looked at some of the young men who came forward and might have thought, he doesn't really look as though he's shaving. I wonder if he's old enough. But actually, he's so malnourished that life in the army will probably do him some good. He'll be getting fresh air and he will be getting regular food. So some of them were allowed in because the recruiting officers really did think it was the best thing for them. And everybody believed that it would be over by Christmas. In 1915, more troops were needed, and Kitchener had a big campaign. You might have seen the posters, "Your country needs you." It's estimated that around 250,000 of our troops were actually underage. They lied and said that they were older than they were. 1 in 5 of them were returned home when they got to the front, either because the officers there looked at them and thought, he's not shaving, there's no way he's 19. Or because people then saw the reality of it and actually admitted that they were under 18. The youngest person to serve in the British Armed Forces in World War I was 12 years old. This was confirmed in 2013. His name was Sidney Lewis, and he fought in the Battle of the Somme. Is there anybody here who is 12 years old? Can you stand up? How would you feel? How would you three feel if you had to go and fight in a war now? Scared. Thank you. Sit down again. Oh, actually, how tall are you as well? Okay. Oh, I don't know what that is. Never mind. I won't ask because I can't translate centimetres to... Goodness, you can tell my age, can't you? Can I ask all the men here and the boys of 12 and upwards to stand up, please? Up to 41 years of age. Sorry. Oh, Greg, I'm really sorry. I didn't mean to embarrass you like that. Okay, so we haven't actually got many, but you think now that actually if the church was full of people of all ages, just how many of you there would be? Anybody sort of, can I just talk to you at the moment? Because you look slightly older. The rest of you sit down. So can I just ask, are you married? How many children, have you got children? You haven't got children. Are you hoping to have children? Okay, no pressure. Sorry. Have you got parents, siblings, friends? How would they feel if you didn't come back from war? What impact would it have on your wife? Financially, as well as, yeah. Okay, thank you. Sit down again. Sorry to pick on you. So conscription was introduced in 2016, with first single men of up to 41 being drafted, and then married men because they just couldn't find enough troops. They numbered about 2.77 million were conscripted, and about 2.67 million volunteered. By the end of the war, around one in four of the total male population, so that's men of all ages over 18, had joined up. One in four. Has anybody counted how many people there are in church today, or have we a rough estimate? Do we know? People. Can you imagine then if 40 of you went off to fight? What would that look like in the general population? That's 40 of the men here going off. No, it wouldn't be. Sorry, forget my mathematics. But one in four of the total male population of the British Isles joined up to fight. Just think of the impact of that on daily life. Just think of all those families wondering if they are going to hear that their loved one has been injured or died. And do you know how they found out? They didn't have a visit at that stage. Now, if one of your loved ones dies in the forces overseas, you will be visited by army officers or navy officers, whichever force you're in. But at that stage, what they did was they listed those dead on a piece of paper that came up, usually outside the news agents each day. So if you've watched 100 Years of Tommies, there's a three-part serial on the BBC, and I'd encourage you to watch it. One little girl said her mum sent her round to see if there was any news about what was happening. And she, as a little girl, saw that the ship her dad was on had been sunk with all hands lost. And she, as a little girl, I think she was 6 or 8, had to go back and say, "Mum, Dad's dead." Those who served 100 years ago, their hopes of tomorrow, next week, next month, next year, were definitely dashed because the war went on for 4 years. But I suspect their hopes for 5 and 20 years were also wrecked because they changed so much and life changed so much. If they weren't one of the 18% who were killed, all of them were changed. Some physically, but all mentally and spiritually. Their hopes and dreams were sacrificed. The hopes and dreams for them of their parents, children, siblings, and friends were also sacrificed. Life changed for everyone in those years, because for the women as well, they had to take over the jobs that were no longer being done by the men. They worked in the munitions factories, and they were not safe places to work. You know that because they were built over water. But also for a mother left with 6 children, with no man to provide the income for them, she had to do what she could to make ends meet. She had to be mother and father to those children and provide an income for food. Life changed for everyone. They never got those years back. A lost arm cannot regrow. Lost innocence cannot be restored. So many sacrificed so much. And listening to that BBC programme, it's clear that most expected to die. They were prepared to die so that others could live free. It can only be love that enables people to make that sort of sacrifice. What sort of sacrifices do you make, or are you prepared to make? Do you ever think of or pray for our armed forces personnel who are currently overseas or their families? Because actually, when you have got somebody serving overseas, and if the phone goes late at night, you're worried that they're going to be injured. If you see personnel coming to your front door, you fear the worst, and you live every day with that expectation. Are you aware that an appallingly high percentage of returning personnel are so scarred by what they've experienced or seen or done that many cannot adapt back into family life and live stunted lives, many of them living rough on the streets? And that's partly why, as a church, we have the winter night shelter. Are you willing to sacrifice something to help them? And I don't mean giving away the orange Smarties that you don't like. I mean actually making a sacrifice that is a sacrifice that causes you financial hurt. Or that gives up your time to support those who are in need. Are you willing to get engaged in fighting injustice and sticking up for the vulnerable or for this planet? For example, would you be prepared to sacrifice time and money to lobby our MPs about getting tough with Saudi Arabia and their continued war in the Yemen? Is there anybody who has not seen the pictures of those starving to death every day in the Yemen? How can we see those pictures of people who are literally bones with skin over the top, unable to move, to even brush the flies away, and not try to do something to fight against it? And don't you think that Trump's posturing echoes that of a certain Austrian-born German dictator in saying that some people are sub-citizens and should not be allowed to exist within their country? Should we be fighting against that and speaking up? What happens if we allow that rhetoric to drip into our consciousness year on year? Can't we start to believe that some people are not as human, as important as we are? Evil prospers when good men do nothing. Or what about a sacrifice you could make, which would be to cut out palm oil out of your daily life? Is there anybody who has seen the banned Iceland advert, which was also filmed by Greenpeace, about orangutan? If you haven't, go back and look it up. The rainforest is the lungs of our planet. Once it's gone, where does our oxygen come from? And it's all happening because we have palm oil to make our shampoo and our bubble bath, and I think it's in chocolate and all sorts of other things as well. My great-grandfather fought in World War I, sacrificed years of time with his family, sacrificed his health mentally, spiritually, and physically, and was prepared to sacrifice his life. Meanwhile, we are allowing our planet to be plundered so that we have cheap products at the expense of the lungs of this planet and endangered species. We are allowing people to die of starvation because they're being persecuted by an allied country. And we are not adequately supporting those who on low wages are sent out in our name by our government, who we elected, to fight on behalf of us. Are you prepared to fight for others and for this planet? What are you prepared to sacrifice?